Recording.
As you have are aware,
user in your channel started recording.
What I'm looking for in your presentations, in your notes, in your discussion, is that you demonstrate an understanding of
user in your channel started recording.
Several things. I'm typing in the text chat. Our story to U.S. history. 3. Economics. 4. Psychology. Not everything in the world about psychology. Nor everything in the world about U.S. history. Nor everything in the world about economics or psych or our story. But that it's significant and how they go together. I hope you have learned by now that this is an old course with me, and there your understanding the is what's really paramount. You're taking notes is a way to facilitate your understanding, yet taking notes alone, having dates alone, having names alone, won't demonstrate that you understand. Okay. If I determine that your understanding is not sufficient, you will be required to take this course again. Okay. And the key again is not that you have read it, but that you really understand these themes and how they tie together. So, with that being said, this discussion and your what I hear from you and read from you is part of your my assessment. Okay. First, let us venture into what we haven't discussed in class, and that is the last section of this. I would like, yes, Averamenta, to start the discussion. Thank you, Averamenta. We will be going back and forth with that in Black Reconstruction. Some of the questions I'll ask also will be from the Vincent Harding. Okay, because that was a key part. But to help really get this going, would you go to the private message section? I'll just start it this way, and then we're going to talk about it. All of you open a private message to me. Private message to me. Okay. And would you, is that done? Okay. All right. Okay. So now, if you will, the last section is called The Neglect and Death of Araminta. Would you say in your own words what you know about and what you've learned in that section about the neglect of Araminta, and then so what do you know about the neglect, and then and what was significant about her dying to you in terms of his story of it? Okay. Wow. Then you definitely aren't finished. Wow. Why not? You were supposed to finish the book. That last section. That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. All right. TJ, are you prepared to answer that, please? If so, make it happen. Abdullah, you haven't read this, and you would ask if there was anything pertinent. It's amazing. You might in the future say something like, I know it's important, and we would really like this time for. Oh, I'm sorry. I am absolutely sorry. I've said that several times that you were supposed to. I said, finish the book. And I'm sorry. I signed it several times to finish reading the book. Said, in terms of Araminta. And intentionally, I'm not giving you more work. I was out, not feeling well on Tuesday. And so I've said, actually, last week, not this week, last week, several times, finish reading the chapter. Right after the presentations of the chapters you were assigned, this was something to you to do on your own. So no problem. Then, we'll have to finish it when you come back. 'Cause you can't finish, you can't finish the class without finishing the book. All right, TJ, where are you with it? Talk to me about where you are. Langston, me too. I don't like you hanging back, man. So I don't see a private text to me, so I don't see you writing. So if you're not writing, then you got to be talking. And I mean talking. So tell me, TJ, if you don't have a mic, then type. Langston going once. Great. Thank you. I'll look for your answer. TJ, are you in this class today? TJ, Tarala Sutton. Tarala Sutton. All right. Okay. So the Smiths have not read the last section at all, is that right? So you haven't read the last section of the book, The Neglect and Death, is that correct? All right. Okay. The section before The Neglect and Death is The War Years of Araminta. Have you read that, The Smiths? Have you completed the section? The section is part five, and it has a few chapters in it. Abdullah, weigh in, please. Amatala. Ooh. Okay. All righty. I see. Okay. Well, then you aren't prepared to answer most of these questions from that section. All right. The three of you are, must. Isn't that section just before chapter 20? What section are you talking about? The war section or what? Part 6. I'm calling them sections. They're also part. Talk to me, Neiman, please. So I'm missing what you want. Ask me the question that you want to ask verbally.
I'm just asking, in the war section that you're talking about, isn't that just the one that is before this one they're just talking about, the neglect and death? So wouldn't that
Wouldn't that include what? I didn't hear the last part.
I was just asking, isn't that the war section that you're talking about, isn't that the one, wouldn't that encompass all of the chapters that we have read, since we've read up to the chapter before the neglect and death?
Oh, yeah, that would yes, for those people who've read it. Sure, the section before the neglect and death is the war years of Araminta. The section before that is I Know There's Going to Be War. The section before that is Captain Brown and the Woman. The section before that is Follow North Star. And the first section was Youth and Revolt. And so those are the sections, and each of the sections have small chapters in them. Okay? All right. Okay. So... all right, let me shift. And I will shift to another part. Langston, come on the mic, son, and tell me where you are. I know you're typing.
On chapter 18.
So have you read this chapter that I'm talking about in the neglect and death?
No, I'm answering it.
Well, I mean,
I read it now.
What do you mean now?
Like, we asked just the question.
Okay. No, that's not what I'm... Yeah, it's cool, son. So how much have you... Had you read the chapter? Have you read it and taken notes on this section, this last section, on the neglect and death of Heritoma?
Everyone up to 18.
And what chapter starts the neglect and death of Harry Tubman?
I don't know. I need to go look through my notes pages.
Okay. How many of you have printed this out and put it in a notebook? Hello? How many of you have printed the Araminta book out and put in a notebook?
User entered your channel.
Unique, would you type me a note of why you're late coming in this morning, please? I'm glad to see you. And just type a note so I have a record of that. Just type in the text chat. Langston, have you printed this out?
No, I haven't.
Okay. It's written there. I mean, it's copied there in whatever form to assist you. The best thing is to buy the book. And I know at different times that's difficult for various reasons. And the next best thing is to print it out page by page and create your own book. Well, Allende got a copy. It is out of print, but you can get books that are out of print. You know, the books that I scan in are to assist you so that you're not stopped. The learning is not stopped. I also am mindful that it costs money. And you can spread that out by printing the pages out and putting them together. That's not a requirement. It's a suggestion. The first suggestion is that you save up some pennies over time, over the semester, and buy the book so you can have it in your library and you pass it on. The sections, as I said, are Youth in Revolt. And Langston, you can stop typing, son. It wasn't a ask for you to go back and read and then try to extract it quickly. I was really wanting for you to say what you knew as a way for us to start the discussion. We can't have that discussion because nobody read it. And I'm not going to go over it like for the first time when you've not read it, when I've signed it. I'm typing in here the sections of the book. And inside the sections there are chapters. This is easier to see when it's printed out or when you outline it in that way, but okay, those are the sections. All right. So, we'll leave the previous section off. Let's see about. What is your summary? You can put this in your tab. And what is your summary of the Youth and Revolt section? How would you summarize that in about three sentences or four? Short paragraph. Again, I'm not asking
User
for
you
to do
all recording.
Your notes. I'm asking for what's for you. What is this section about? What was it about? Open a private chat to me and type it in there, and then let's talk about it. What was it about? What was significant for you? Okay, I'll. What was significant? All right. I'll go to the table of contents so I can tell you what. The bread of service, a blow for freedom, and escape. The bread of service, a blow for freedom, and escape. Now, if you don't have a, you might want to type that down so you get that. That was part one. The bread of service, a blow for freedom, escape. What was significant? Significant to you, significant to the story. Thank you, Unique. Appreciate that. Nima, what was significant in that section to you, and what was significant to the story? Okay, if you add that, I'll be interested in seeing that. Folks, this is not go to your notes time. If I ask you to write and I think you're taking too long, then you're not doing what I want you to do. Okay? You are, I'm asking you to go from your memory, okay? Go from your synthesis. The goal of the class is not for you to just have a series of notes. One of the things I asked you when you're taking notes, in addition to your dates and the vocabulary and the people, also to keep summarizing the story. So that's what I'm looking for. Okay, I'm looking for what was significant. So I'm just looking for your... Abdullah, I don't see a private text chat to me.
I'm still typing.
Okay, great. And Unique, you won't know this part, I don't think. If you do have answers for it, I'm not holding you responsible for this part, because you weren't taking this part of the class with us. What I do want you to write, okay, Langston. Is this what was Langston? In addition to this general description, what was significant about any of these things, okay, that you have listed here? So, what was significant to you personally? Okay, what did you judge as significant, which may not be the same thing as someone else? And what do you think was significant to this story? Since this was the beginning of it, and now you know the end of it, or almost the end, what was significant to this story, and what was significant to you? All right. All right, the very next section was Follow the North Star. And in this section, you have, this is actually the section with the most chapters. You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 chapters. This is the heart of the book, or at least a key part. The Birth of Moses is one chapter. A Christmas Gift for Canada. Somebody might take these as I'm saying them in the default text chat. Through the Underground Network, Guerrilla Warfare in the mid-50s, The Escape of Joshua Bailey, The Locomotive, and we'll break these down in a minute, The Locomotive of History, Jail, the Goddess of Liberty, and The Greatest Heroine of the Age. Those chapters. It's called Follow the North Star. Section 2 or Part 2. All right, so let's just break this one down since this is so huge. Let's break it into some bite-sized bits. Let's take the first three chapter, the birth of in this section, the birth of Moses, a Christmas gift for Canada, and through the Underground Network. What are those? What were those chapters about? And what was significant to you? And what was significant to the story? It's actually 4 through 11, the greatest heroine of the age. One of the things that I've asked you early on is to, as you were going through, to make sense of the title of the chapter and why the author entitled it that, so that you really, you know, can then hold the title as a summary of what's there. You should be writing, Abdullah. Very good. So, I see. Okay, Max is still writing. All right, Nima, I got the first part. What I'm also looking for, and that's a great summary. Also looking for is what was significant to you and significant to the story. That will continue through all of these. That's right. I'm sorry, I'm taking the treasure. No, but I can call it. All right, so everybody's done that. Now let's see if we can discuss some of these since I have your what's significant. Okay, and Unique, you came in during some
User,
of this time.
Your channel started recording.
I see. All right. So I'm going to ask follow-up questions for discussion based on what you have written here. And together, we will see what kind of summary we have. Let's start with you, Langston. You have in the first section, it was about discussing her birth, her family background, the early obstacles she encountered in her younger years. You said what was very significant to the story and to you. And I want you to watch when you write this, very significant to the story and myself. Okay. Just some way in. Where is that correct to say very significant to the story and myself versus the story and me? Which one is more grammatically correct usage. All right, I'll read the sentence again. He says, very significant to the story and myself was the chapter titled A Blow for Freedom. And Langston, the reason I'm bringing this up, Langston, is because welcome, TJ. Did you just get back, brother? I assume that means computer is not holding the charge. Okay. Okay. Now, Langston, I'd ask you to look up that rule. What's the rule? Language arts question. What's this rule that governs that? There's a lot of people who use that. Is there a rule that governs? Very significant to the story and myself was the chapter titled A Blow for Freedom. Why, Tarala, do you say very significant to the story and me? And why me as opposed to myself? And Langston, since you use this repeatedly, why do you think myself as opposed to me?
I think myself a lot.
Yes. I've asked you to look it up before to see, you know, what was correct. I don't mean that in a put-down way, in terms of you say it yourself. I'm not trying to put you down at all, and I don't think you're self-centered or anything like that. I'm just saying in this particular form. Anybody quickly? I don't want to turn, you know, go into the depth. The story and I? Okay. Just put a pin in it, folks. Put a pin in it. Come back to it. Look it up. That's fine, you know. Yeah, it's fine. Okay. Okay, I don't want to go into it right now. I mainly want you to know and be clear about that, and all of us to be clear about that. So, Langston, you said it was significant, was a chapter. The chapter is about taking a little blow to the head when trying to aid an African, and when Nat Turner's raid inspired her to do all she could do to free her people. On that same section, Nima says it was significant, the work she did as a child and her parents' way of bringing her up, and her worldview as a child. Nima, I want you to say more about that. Just as Langston, I want you to say more about why that's significant. Not typing it. This is the part we will discuss. Matala said for this section, her grandparents were full-blooded Africans. That was stood out and was significant. And that the Araminta received her dent in her head, convex in that section. And in that section, Abdullah adds, and Tarala, I'm glad you're back because I want you to be, you know, taking in some of the summary because you're going to have to go back and read those other chapters. He said it was what stood out for her. Her name origin stood out for me, and how the Africans, he says, captives. Abdullah, you consistently, even though I've asked you many times to begin to substitute Africans for captains or put them together, why do you leave it off? Talk to me.
talked to Matt. I was trying to move fast because you were going through the questions fast. So,
okay. Okay. How the captives at the time allowed civil names? What do you mean by that? Civil names? Oh, weren't allowed civil names. What's that? What do you mean?
It was in the chapter, but I guess they weren't allowed to name their own children or whatever, and they would just name them based off of the first name of, if it was a girl, it would be the first name of their mother and the last name of their father or something like that.
Uh-huh. Okay. He said, I believe knowing some of her influences are important to the story. And to get a feel of how the story will go. All right. So we have from Nima, Matla, Abdullah, and Langston the what's significant about that. Some of the same and some different. Langston, why was it significant for you that her taking a literal blow to the head when trying to aid an African? Why is that significant to you?
It shows to the reader that she had a defiance to all of the Brodus or to her captives.
You mean captors?
Right, captors, sorry.
Okay. I see. What stood out for Matla is that, who was that that said that that actually was also shown very early. Nima, what was significant about her parents' way of bringing her up to you?
I thought it was significant because I never heard of such a, I guess, close-up and personal view of how African captives raised their children.
Hold on. I'm sorry. Okay, come again.
I was saying that I hadn't heard a close-up or personal view of how African captives had raised their children and what beliefs they imparted to them and also the way that she viewed her situation and her parents' situation.
Great. And what do you remember about how they did raise her and actually, you know what? I'm going to use your question to ask someone else. Abdullah, your sister Nima says she was... what was significant is her, you've heard her say, being aware of and kind of up close how they were bringing her up, what they were instilling into her. What were some of those things, both her views as a child and how her parents brought her up? I'm actually wanting discussions right here now, son. Oh, you type thinking. Okay, all right. Well, all right. We'll see if while you keep on thinking, I'll see what Langston thinks about it while you are thinking. Langston, what from your remembrance did her parents teach her, and were some of her views?
I'm not sure off the top of my head either. I need to think about it.
All right. Well, write that down as something to think about. Okay? Just make a note of it. All right. And put in the text chat, though. I want it to be not a private note. Put it right here in the default text chat. Amatala, what is her grandparents being full-blooded Africans? How was that significant? You said you thought it was interesting. Of course, you know, I don't know what interesting means, so I'm asking you, what does interesting mean in this sentence? What did it mean to you? What did it tell you? Why was that significant to you, and how?
I just thought it was interesting because a lot of the Africans and captives that were surrounding her, their generations of their family were already in captivity, and I just thought it was interesting that people as close as her grandparents were actually full-blooded Africans to her. And the captives around her said that her rebellious spirit, she got that from her Ashantis, or they were basically guessing that she was Ashanti because of the way she looked and the way that she acted.
All right. Excellent. One of the things that you point out in that is that we often think captivity is far, far away, are not. One of the ways of collapsing the time is to know the generations. One of the things that we haven't done, but I mentioned early on a couple of times, is the intersection of Araminta's life with your own family's timeline. And some of you talked about you actually have done family history. And I think Amatala that you had, or your family had, is that correct? Have you done a genealogy?
No, we haven't.
Okay. And Langston, I think you're going back. Araminta died when? Well, y'all don't know that because y'all haven't gotten to that section. She died in 1913. My parents were born in 1930. Okay, my parents. So my grandparents, okay, were born when your great grandmother was 1 year old. Mm-hmm. And if you go back, she's still alive. Wow. Monica. Wow. What? Wow. What's her name? I'd say it just to give praise, man. It's always important to call her name. Monikasa. That means great speech. Great words. Monikasa. Okay. Aha. It's like a mo in from the Yoruba. Aha. It's Yoruba. Monikasa. Mo. Daisy, thank you. I appreciate that. All right, so you will begin to see how close Araminta is. And all right, let's keep going based on what you have typed in the text chat in terms of knowing what's significant to you. Abdullah said that what's significant and what stood out is how beyond the civil names piece, why was that significant to you? What stood out for you? Why does that stand out for you? What does that mean to you, Abdullah? And the next thing that you said is knowing some of her African influences. Why is that? Why are those things important? Say some more about those, both to you and or to the story.
I guess for me, the whole name thing, because I was wondering, why are you calling her Araminta, not Harriet Tubman? I've known her to be called, and I guess learning that her name wasn't even Harriet Tubman first, it was first Harriet Ross, and then Araminta was another name given to her. So, I mean, I guess that was kind of like, okay, now I understand that. And Let me see. Oh, yeah, for influences. I guess for me, it kind of set the tone for me as far as the story and how it would go, and her seriousness level, if that's a word, and the amount of how committed she would be to, you know, free as many African captives as possible, so.
Uh-huh. Great. Now, Abdullah just said that part of why, this is what I understand, Abdullah, that you got a better understanding of why I use color Araminta as opposed to Harriet Tubman, because neither one of those were her names, or Harriet Tubman wasn't a name. First was Harriet Ross. And anybody else have any ideas about why I call her Araminta and not Harriet Ross or Harriet Tubman?
Because we want to honor her African heritage instead of the name that she was given.
That's right. Very good. Even if she could have taken a European name, if she also had an African name, Abdullah, I would call her by that. For the reason that Langston mentioned. And when I meet someone, and very often I'll meet someone from Africa, and they will either have shortened their name or taken on a European name to make it more comfortable, they think, for us. And I ask them politely, very good, TJ. I ask them, may I call you by your African name? If they say no, then I'll honor that. I don't try to impose it on them. At the same time, I try to lift up the Africa in everyone, including myself. So that's significant for you to know about that, in addition to that piece. All right. You're in the next section. Abdullah says William Steele is introduced. TJ, who is William Steele, and why is he significant? Abdullah says she's making 20 plus journeys by sections in. Earlier, Matala pinned that she'd made 11 or 12 trips back, and she had a question mark by that. Langston, would you weigh in on that disparity? What is your record of how many trips she made back? So, TJ, while you're typing, Langston is answering this question.
Can I look through my notes real quick? I don't have it memorized.
Nope, you cannot. That's one of the things that I want you to have memorized. Do y'all remember a little song? In previous classes, we've actually had that song where you've had to go out and teach it to students and like preschool programs and elementary programs. We didn't get to do that this semester. We may. So do you remember the song? Harriet Tubman didn't take no stuff, wasn't scared of nothing neither. Then, remember that one? Harriet Tubman didn't take no stuff, wasn't scared of nothing neither. Didn't come in the world to be no captive and wasn't gonna stay one either. Farewell, she said to her friends one night. She was mighty sad to leave them. She ran away that long dark night, ran looking for a freedom. Ran to the woods and ran through the woods with the captors right behind her. She ran to her freedom 19 times. She ran for her freedom 19 times to save black sisters and brothers. Araminta didn't take no stuff, wasn't scared of nothing neither. Anyway, 19. That's the official recording. 19. Right. Nobody really knows. But 19 is what's accepted as official. TJ, I'm looking for you about William Steele. Did I miss it? You ask, TJ asks a question. How do you know their African name? So it's a great question. How did we come about that name and suggesting that that name, you know, is about Africa or is African name or whatever? Would you please, anybody can answer TJ's question.
I think it said in the book, I think it said that her parents would call her Araminta. I think that was where we got that name from.
Great, that's true. And the author said something different than your instructor about that name. What's the disagreement between the author and your instructor about that name? Anybody?
The author says that a lot of African girls' names were Araminta when that wasn't the case.
And what did your instructor say?
You said we don't know that for sure. We only know of Araminta, or we only know of the girl in the story who is Araminta to be the only Araminta.
And what you're getting from your classmates is one of the ways to say the same thing at the same time, stay on safe ground, is to say that there's no evidence of that, okay? And very often when it comes to some things in the past, we have to go on what evidence we know, and sometimes that changes as new evidence is found. At the same time, as a student of African and African American history, and after having studied from people who've studied a lot more than me, I've not seen any evidence of that claim that he made, okay, and that this was a common name, I think he was trying to make the best guess he could, or that may have been guessed by someone else in some of his research. So that takes care of that part, and part of what's important, Langston, is that you know how to say that, you know, according to me, there's no evidence of that. And I invite you all to look as you go through life and study more about our history, whether or not you hear that or see any evidence of that. I've not seen any. Still, that doesn't get it to be an African name. How does your instructor, you know, make that assumption, and why? Hello? Nobody want to remember that? Because that's what Terrell is saying. He says, how did you know their, I assume, African name? Very good question, Terrell. And TJ, how did he assist Araminta? I see what you wrote, a black African abolitionist. It's enough for you to say either African or black. Okay, I don't mind you putting them together. It's okay, it's not wrong. Do you remember in your reading how he assisted Araminta, if you say he assisted her? All right, so I take it there are no guesses on that. So we'll leave that. You can put that as just something. All right, let's shift into the next section and some more. Something that stood out to Amatala is that the center of the Underground Railroad was Araminta's hometown. Do you concur with that?
I'm not even sure because I don't even remember it being like the base of operations for the Underground Railroad being mentioned.
I think they just said it was the base of the Underground Railroad after she started getting known for her rescues. I think that's probably why they said it was the base.
Hmm. That's interesting. I'd love to go there. I never got that was the base. Because actually, part of what the Hot Underground Railroad worked is that there was actually no base of the Underground Railroad. And as you know from this, who actually got more Africans across the line than Araminta? How many Africans did she get across the line to freedom? Garrett Smith and Thomas Grunt Garrett. Good guess. Good guesses, both of you. What do you say? So you're in the truth, nice to okay? Not quite. I can just tell you that. William Steele.
It was like Mary something, right? It was a lady.
Oh, you're trying to say Maria Stewart?
That's it.
That's this is great. Okay, good guessing. All right. This is a good section now, folks. Let's make some clarification. Who is William Steele? No, William Steele actually did not participate as a conductor on the Underground Railroad. William Steele was an historian or historian, and he has a powerful, powerful story in his own right. And the reason we know as much about as we do about the Underground Railroad is because of his work and his documenting and his interviewing people. So, of course, he was a part of it. But by the time they got to him, particularly early on, they had reached free territory. And so it wasn't William Steele. TJ, what exactly is a historian? Okay, great question. Classmates, answer from your understanding. What exactly is a historian, anyway?
I think it's someone who, right, documents history, studies one or more eras or time periods, and they write about it. They would interview others, and if they couldn't interview others, then they would look up all they could on the subject and then write about it and try as best as they could to write true stuff. Or I think a good historian would write true stuff.
Oh, yes, you're right. A good historian would. Would they be considered a writer? Yes. And some historians are better writers than others. You were introduced to There is a River, and that is a historian, and he's a much better writer than most historians. You can tell the same story in ways that are dry, and there is no such thing as telling the story objectively, because you're always telling it from your own perspective, even though in the name of science, folks will feign objectivity and try to defend that their story is objective. when in fact there is no such thing. Okay, there may be fair, there may be balanced, there may be presenting opposing points of view or taking those into account, but real objectivity is an impossibility. Given what you know in this course, why would I say such a thing? Given what you've learned about the psychology, and the worldview, why would I say that true objectivity is an impossibility? Have y'all been hearing me? Did y'all hear the question? Any takers? The question about why do I say that true objectivity is an impossibility given what you've learned about the psychology in this class?
Because you're always going to be talking from your point of view and you can't really help that.
Very good.
User in your channel timed out.
How could people come to get us in captivity on the good ship Jesus? For them, that they were, that what they were doing was not against their religious beliefs. That's from their point of view. From their point of view, they were justified. From their worldview and point of view, I was totally different. Okay. Tarala, you got to answer that question. Nima did a report on this gentleman. Okay. One of the reasons that Araminta was considered with such esteem is that she was African, and she traveled. She was a conductor. She didn't run a station. What's the difference between a conductor and a station manager?
User
or station,
your channel.
Station master? Unique? What's the difference between a conductor on the Underground Railroad and a station manager? Please, not a lot of silence, y'all. Just, if you know, or guess, or thinking, I gotta know something. I am.
User,
I was asking
your channel timed out.
I was asking Unique. That wasn't to everybody. I'm sorry. It was Unique. Answer, please. She timed out again. Okay. Anybody, what's the difference?
A conductor would lead Africans to safety, while a station manager would, like, keep a safe house or a specific area on the railroad to for a conductor and whoever she was with to go to.
All right. Great. So conductor, was in the field. Araminta was a conductor. There is a person that's mentioned in the book. His name is Levi Cotton, who ushered more Africans in through the Ohio port than Araminta did. Levi Cotton is a white man, white abolitionist, and he had a store on a front, and he was able to usher, and we're appreciative to him for that. He's not, just so that you know raw numbers, you need to know his name, okay? Was that his birth? Was that his birth name? As best I know, I've not spent a lot of time researching Levi Cotton. I spend most of my time researching Africans and lifting that work. And at the same time, I don't discredit any person when they've done some things that's significant, particularly significant to us. What I do, Tarala, is to make sure that they don't have center stage. And this is something that you got to watch out for when white people are honoring black people. There's a movie called Biko that I'd encourage you to see. It's about Stephen Biko from South Africa and the South African movement. The problem is, in the first third of the movie, Biko is killed, and the struggle about this white family who was inspired by him, and that's the rest of the story. And there are many other stories that's supposedly about black people, but end up being more about white people learning their lesson and loving or sacrificing and willing to die and all of that. And so the black person begins to be a backdrop to a white people's story. It's another way of subtle white supremacy that often is unintended, and but at the same time sometimes is. Nima, you did research on Levi Cotton. Would you share a little bit of information with everybody here from your memory? Was it Levi? The man, it wasn't. Didn't you do research on the person who was on the underground? I mean, ran the Underground Railroad in Ohio. Okay, I got it wrong now. My bad. I'll take it back. All right. So, just trying to extend and answer that question. All right. Tell me, who was David Walker? Anybody?
David Walker was an abolitionist and a public speaker.
Okay. Thank you, Nima. Anybody else add to what in terms of what you know about David Walker? Anything you know about David Walker?
I know we went over David Walker's appeal in class, and he was a writer.
Mm-hmm. What did he write, Abdullah?
David Walker's appeal.
Very good. Langston, where is he from? Where was he born?
I don't know where he was born.
Where did he then hang out?
Boston.
Uh-huh. Very good, TJ. And what was significant about David Walker's appeals? Why was it that an African in captivity might be put to death if he had a copy of David Walker's appeals?
Because I think David Walker wrote the appeals to empower black people that were captives and people that were out of captivity.
Mm-hmm. And Nima has also said why, and you're right, Amatala, and that is urging African captives, yes, to rise up and free themselves. He said, if you must bleed, let it all come at once. Rather die freeman than live to be in hellish chains. It's worth your reading, folks, the whole David Walker's appeals. It's worth your reading. And so sometimes you might choose as a project in one of the other courses that you take here, or some other reading when you have an opportunity to choose to read David Walker's appeals, just as others might read the Declaration of Independence, or others might read any other speeches or other things that were significant to the freedom. All right, let's move forward here. Who is Maria Stewart? Langston was stumbling on her name earlier. Who is Maria Stewart?
She was a public speaker and a women's rights activist.
Okay, so why is she significant to us? I mean, there are plenty of women's rights advocates and public speakers. Why is she significant to African people, to our story? Let's see. How was she different than Sojourner Truth, who wrote, "And ain't I a woman?" That's okay. Nima says she thinks she was the first public speaker. Okay. What did she? She actually was a lot stronger about African captivity than she was about women's suffrage. I don't mean that she didn't speak out about that. But if you cast her as a woman suffragette first and a African woman speaking against African captivity and oppression second, you will be woefully misled. Who was her contemporaries? Who were her contemporaries? Type in the text chat. Type some of the contemporaries for Maria Stewart. And if the questions that I ask you, you don't know, then type the question in the text chat as a note to yourself. Okay? I mean, one of the things that I shifted when I first, you know, asked and discovered that nobody had finished the book is that I'm still taking some assessment, but we're going to have to continue this because we're not finishing this thing without finishing the book. It's just all there's to it. At the same time, I hope you use this time wisely, okay? And some of you will get calls from me for specific things. TJ, I really want you to use this time to do some catching up for you to... Unique, you need to use this time that you have off to read this whole book, the parts that you haven't read, to make sure that your notes, you know, and I will probably, since you are in Atlanta, have you arranged to be close to me so that I can see what's going on with your computer and make sure what you have in your notes and all that stuff is straight. I may even ask you and Langston to hook that. I see. Thank you, Langston. I see Langston has put in one person. Nobody else has put in anything about a contemporary. Abdullah, tell me what you know. Your classmate Langston says that William Lloyd Garrison was a contemporary of David Walker. Contrast the two, please, sir.
David Walker and William Lloyd Garrison?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know much about William Lloyd Garrison. I don't remember him.
Okay. Nima, contrast the two, please.
Garrison was a militant abolitionist. He fought for Africans to like take up arms and attack people. And David Walker, his view was more of a self empowerment by like escape and protests and stuff like that.
Not quite. Okay, not quite. Not quite. William Lloyd Garrison was actually a moral suasionist. William Lloyd Garrison was a white. And when you say abolitionist, particularly during this period, make sure you indicate whether it's a white or an African abolitionist. It makes a lot of difference, okay? Because some people, Amatla said David Walker was an abolitionist. So it's a big difference being a white abolitionist and an African abolitionist.
Entered your channel.
And one of the big differences was the cost, okay? A white abolitionist could move in and out of things, but I won't go into that. Let's make sure. Okay. Henry Harlan Garnett, thank you very much. Now you're talking for someone who says, and his Henry Harlan Garnett's the name of his publication.
Your channel started recording.
Was what? Nima or anybody else? Nima, you can lead off. What was the name of the publication?
It was called the Call to Rebellion.
Call to Rebellion. When he published this speech, which was Call to Rebellion, and he was directing it toward Africans in captivity, of course, exhorting those he was presenting it to and the National Negro Convention movement. After giving that speech, he published that speech along with another document. What document was that? Does anybody remember? It wouldn't be in your text. It's something that I told you. He published that document along with David Walker's appeals. David Walker, by that time, had been killed. Okay, and he published his address to the African captives.
User in your channel timed out.
Also called Address to the Slaves. Okay, and so anyway, the point is he called for Africans to rebel. So did David Walker. David Walker called for Africans to kill our captors. Okay. You are not going to rebel just by being puffed up and self-empowered. You're going to rebel by taking the people who were keeping you physically in rebellion, physically in captivity, off the planet. Now William Lloyd Garrison was a far cry from either of them. William Lloyd Garrison influenced Frederick Douglass. All right? And so for the longest time, Frederick Douglass was more of a gradualist. Frederick Douglass, great man that he was more of a king compared to Malcolm, more of less appeal to their moral conscience. And David Walker and Henry Harlan Garnett, actually David Walker was passed by that time, but Garnett and Martin Delaney essentially said to Douglass, they both knew Douglass and debated with him. Martin wrote in his papers, Martin Delaney wrote in the Frederick Douglass papers, and they disagreed with his slow appeal to their moral conscience part, and were more what people would call today militant. That is Martin Delaney and David Walker and Maria Stewart and Henry Harlan Garnett. That's one camp. There are many others. And Harriet Tubman. All right. Please don't mix up Garrett. We did cover this in class. It was actually in that last section. So we ventured into that section a bit. And William Lloyd Garrison, at the end of the toward the end of the Civil War, maybe at the end, he was given a gift, and Araminta was given a gift. Contrast those gifts. Very significant. For 30 years of hard service and labor, he was given a gift. And the author contrasts these two.
User entered your channel.
He was given a gift of $30,000 put it in the text chat. Make sure you look it up and find it, because you will see it again as we will, when you come back, have the first thing on business to finish this, since you will have finished the book and will have studied. And what was the gift? Another, you remember the gift Araminta received at that same period. And that is, she received an injured arm, where they almost twisted her arm out of socket.
User in your channel started recording.
So that person that they were honoring was William Lord Garrison. And what he did compared to Araminta was like nothing. I won't say nothing. I mean, what he did was significant. It just was, it dwarfed in comparison to what Araminta did. Okay? All right? And so, you know, that's William Lloyd Garrison. And again, the key thing is he was a white abolitionist that was a moral suasionist. I don't mean that he didn't advocate for end of captivity and da da, but he basically said, you know, it's all deliberate speed. Let's keep, you know, appealing to the moral conscious and let them know that's not right. Africans said this, appealing to, what they essentially said, they didn't use these words. I'll say these words and you tell me who said them. Moral conscience. They have neither morals nor conscience. How are you going to appeal to their moral conscience when they have neither morals nor conscience? Now, that's somebody that's many years later in our history, a little bit before your time. Anybody know who said that? Who does it sound like? Guess.
You're saying the specific person said that?
Yes, a specific person said that, not back then, but closer to now.
Can you repeat it again?
What I said is, in response to others in the later generation, much later than this period that you're talking about here, but the same kind of argument where people were saying we need to appeal to their moral conscience. And there was a part of a movement, a more recent movement, where black people were trying to appeal to white people's moral conscience. And this other person said moral conscience.
User in your channel.
These people, referring to white people, have neither morals nor conscience. How are you going to appeal to their moral conscience? Very good, Abdullah. I thought you'd get it. That's Malcolm. Okay. In response to the civil rights movement, who were more, we're going to appeal to their moral conscience. Okay. Well, the reason I bring that back and forward is because you had a similar struggle, but led by a white man who was an abolitionist who did good things and helped black people escape, and in the same time then also became influential to some black people in terms of shaping their thinking, and that very often happens as white people who are helpful, particularly if they are not militant, they will militate against our militancy. Okay, and so Araminta went through a transition in her own self to get her through this moral suasionist period. What was that? What was Araminta's process to get her through this piece so that she would not be bound by or Garrett's William Lord Garrison or others, white abolitionists who were more leaning toward moral persuasion, okay, why she wouldn't be influenced or by that. What was the process that she went through that would have her be less influenced by such. That's a question to everybody. All right. Hint, hint. What was her spiritual development?
Oh, was that when she first started? She started praying for them, for her captors, to like have a change of heart, basically. And then, like, once I forget what the event was, but then like she began to pray for her captor to die or something like that.
All right, there you're in the right area, Abdullah. There are four stages to that spiritual development. Like, did she believe in God? Yes, she did. And then she didn't work. And then she didn't work. She prayed for him to die. What do you mean? Then she didn't. Oh, when? You're trying to say when that didn't work, right?
Yes, right.
Okay, there are four stages to that. And that's important, and I've emphasized it before, and it was also in that second section there. Actually, it was in the first section. Because we go through it, African people go through it again and again, and moral suasion is like William Lloyd Garrett or other white people who are helpful and legitimately helpful also very often will be more likely to have us adopt a less militant approach. This has to do with some of the psychology that we're talking about. And so the first stage, who remembers those four? I mean, both of you, Langston and Abdullah, have said something about it. But there is a particular process that the author lays out and that she went through. Very good, Nima. I'm the problem. There's something wrong with me. Notice that moral, that I'm the problem. There's something wrong with me to deserve this. Okay? Now, very often, y'all, just in terms of psychology, if a child in a family is abused or something happens, very often they think, we think, that it's something wrong with us, something that we did to deserve being abused. Okay? So what was her next stage after concluding that it was nothing wrong with her? There was something wrong with him. And so she prayed for God to change him. Change his heart. Okay. That was step two. When God didn't change his heart fast enough for her, and what was the thing that the author, the incident that the author pulled up to have her know she needed to change that prayer because God wasn't working fast enough to change his heart? What was that? All right. She shifted from God change her heart, you're right, to if God, if you won't change his heart, kill him. Take him out of the way. That is, you pray. It's a natural thing. If you go on the battlefield, you pray that God vanquishes your enemies, don't you? Right? You pray that God vanquishes your enemies. Okay? If you go in any war, a chaplain will go to the war. And they soldiers pray that they will be victorious. Okay? That God will vanquish, help you, and will vanquish your enemies. Okay? So she was sending out God to God. If you ain't going to change his heart, then kill him. All right? That's number three. Okay? God, kill him. God, take him out. Have him have a heart attack. You know? As Malcolm says, your children will be born dead. Right? Nobody gonna type 3 in there? We want you to get it. It's important. And then number 4 was what? That's right, Nima. God help me. Help me kill him. Help me do what I need to do. Help me take my people out. You know, help support me. You know, etc. And because. Okay. Because she was fighting, because she had knew that moral suasion wasn't working, appealing to their moral conscience, you know, wasn't doing it, then she knew she had to fight. In this case, she had to get people out. She had to get people to escape. And she took her gun to do that. Now, how many people did Araminta kill during those 19 trips? And I know we'll go to break in a minute. How many people did she kill? How many white people did she kill? Amatla says she doesn't remember. Anybody else? Not sure. It's never stated. So Amatla, you wouldn't remember from the text. And you will never find it written anywhere. It's going to be important for you to use what we call black sense. Okay? Did she kill white people? Oh, here's the deal. She said, I got a right to 2 things, liberty or death, and ain't no man gonna take me alive. And that's what she carried her gun and her rifle for. Okay. So I've never seen any record of Araminta killing anybody. And the closest I've gotten to it is in this book, where the author suggests that she steps over the dead body of the brother who took the axe, and she rushed the jail after rushing the courtroom. I can tell you this. It is highly likely that having to go 500 miles per trip on foot with folks over 19 times behind enemy lines, it is highly likely that she's had to take somebody out. Don't you think? Oh, you see, some stories, folks, are not to be told. I talked to you about why folks who cared about her were careful not to write certain things in that story of going into the jail. Now, you know, it doesn't make sense for her to just, you know, somebody's going to take an axe and kill the big brother who's busting the door down, but then they're just going to fall over when Araminta and the sisters are coming in because they were so remorseful, so they just killed the brother. Right? Come on now. Okay. It's going to be important that you're not just a consumer of data, that you also give thought to it. And there's a rule, and that is, does this make black sense? And if it don't make black sense, then I have a question about it. Okay. Now, I would never say in any definitive way that here is the evidence that she killed white people. And you ask me what I believe, then here's what I believe, and here's why I believe it. Okay? And it would make sense that it was never written, because she could have been hung, killed, if it was ever recorded that she killed a white person. Okay? It's important that you look at this with black sense. This long period, folks, one of the things we haven't covered is the locomotive of history. which is a key piece. Remember, it contains all of the Missouri Compromise and the Nebraska-Kansas Act and more information about U.S. history. Take your break. Come back. And we'll continue. You have 15 minutes.
User in your channel stopped recording.
Hank, come in.
User in your channel stopped recording.
All right. All right, who's ready to rock and roll? All right, excellent, TJ. There is a chapter in our book called The Gift for Canada. Would you type in your private messages to me what is, and Terrell, you may need to open a private message to me, right click on my name. What does the author mean by the gift to Canada? What's significant about this? What is this chapter about, and what's significant about it to you and the story? I'm not sure what number that one is. Well, that's really interesting. A Christmas Gift for Canada, actually, is the name of it. Comes after a birth of Moses, and it is chapter 4. A Christmas Gift. Excuse me, chapter 5. I'm sorry. A Christmas Gift for Canada. What was significant in here? What stuck out for you? What was significant here? Okay, TJ, am I missing it, brother? I don't see a private message from you to me. Unique, you need to be in this one.
User in your channel started recording.
And Nemo, what was significant about that? Particularly the last entry. Okay, I see you got that. Thank you, TJ.
User in your channel started recording.
No, TJ, you're not close. Not close.
User in your channel started recording.
All righty. So let me just share with you what you've, the various things that you've put here. Langston says Araminta saving her brother was significant to me. I'll come back to that. Unique did not add anything. Nima says that they didn't tell her mother that they were in the vicinity. And in Henry's dilemma with his wife's childbirth, and the entire journey on foot, barefoot, shows that they were willing to do for a freedom, shows how treacherous the trips were to get to freedom. Abdullah says what was significant is Jacob Jackson, a fellow conspirator, that I would say liberator. They used it coded levels to communicate. Surely they weren't that smart. Araminta helped her brothers, Benjamin, Henry, and Robert. And Benjamin Ross ate his children without looking at them because he didn't want to tell a lie. In 1855, they'd reached freedom. And TJ says he believed it was a letter that Araminta wrote. Okay. Back to you, Langston. Why was it significant? Araminta saving her brother. What brother are you talking about? What brother?
Brothers. She saved three of her brothers.
That's not what you said. You said Araminta saving her brother.
Right,
okay.
After that, I say
asterisk. Oh, I see. I'm sorry. I missed that. I got you. Okay. Why was that significant to you?
It was significant because it shows more background on her family. So if we never read that her brothers were saved or rescued from captivity, then we just wouldn't know that. We wouldn't know that fact about like three of her family members.
And why is that significant that you know more of her family members?
Usually in books, it's about the orphan African. So I guess the more we hear about her family members and how just their lives, then I guess that sheds more light on her background.
Okay. All right. That's one part. Great. Nima? Why is that significant for you in understanding Araminta and understanding this whole period? What you said is they did the old journey on foot and they didn't tell their mother that they were in the vicinity and Henry's dilemma. Why is that significant to you?
I think that they didn't tell their mother that they were there. Shows
Hold on. I don't know why yours and my interacts like this. I'm cutting it off. Go.
Okay. I think that's significant to say because what was I saying? All right. It shows how eager and urgent it was for them to escape because they knew that if they told their mother, she would have slowed them down and held them up. She would have been worried and maybe even tried to convince him of otherwise. And I think Henry's dilemma with his wife's childbirth shows, it kind of gives a view into the kind of issues that some African captives may have faced when they decided to escape, like with his wife's childbirth, that they made the entire journey almost barefoot. Shows their determination to get to freedom and also how treacherous and the hardships that they faced when they were trying to get to freedom.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. And I definitely want to echo and you have your elevate the part of Henry's dilemma, and we spent some good time on that, having you have a sense of what are the struggles, what were some of the human struggles in this issue of captivity and running for freedom and fighting and all of that, just so that you, it's not just a blur. And Henry's, that piece that the author take time to have us see is just a very, very important part because of that. In addition to that, it's her brother. And I would also add, Langston, in addition to just generally filling it out, it also tells you the people that she came from. You know, when you know folks' family, you know something more about them. And Araminta, the lore is this lone woman who did all this without any sense of you know, a family that would instill certain things, not just in her, but in others. All right. Abdullah, talk a little bit about this. Ben Ross aided his children without looking at them because he didn't want to tell a lie. What do you make of that part?
Well, I mean, when I first read it, I thought it was stupid because I would think that he would. I mean, I don't know why he was fearing so much that, you know, he was going to lie when he had, like, when he was, I guess, I don't know. I would just, when in that situation, wouldn't have time to be fearing telling a lie to some dude that's, or some man that's oppressing me. So, I mean, I don't know. My first idea was kind of stupid that he was doing that.
Yeah, it doesn't make black sense to me either. Okay. And sometimes, depending upon the level of injected oppression, we can decide that, you know, we gotta be I don't know how much, and I don't know, did you follow any of the footnotes to see where this came from? That is, where the author got this information?
No, not for this chapter.
Okay. It's a good idea to, when people are, you know, when something doesn't make black sense, to really get a sense of, you know, where this came from. Like, what story, you know, who was telling this part, and how did they get this? Was this something that Araminta told? Or when stuff doesn't quite make, you know, black sense, because often lore will develop and stories will develop, particularly in a case where if white folks are trying to show us as moral, and moral is telling the truth, you know, then that's a better presentation of the story. I'm not saying that it didn't happen. It may have happened just like they said, in which case, then we can chalk that action up, that nonsensical action, up to fear and the acceptance of a definition of morality that was imposed. Okay. I wouldn't call it stupid, and I encourage you to watch some of your that. It's easy to say I disagree with it, or it doesn't make sense to me, because, you know, sometimes you got to be in a place, in the place of, and this is not just for Abdullah, this is all of us. When we are studying history, one of the mistakes we make is to judge it from now as opposed to from then. Okay. And so, you know, I really reserve, somebody's decision was stupid. I can say I don't understand. I can say I disagree with it. I can say I wouldn't do the same thing, or I don't think I was in a certain situation. At the same time, to be as definitive as, you know, stupid doesn't give credence. And it's also a short jump from that was stupid to he was stupid. I know that's not what you said. And I also just want you to just be aware of those two things, Abdullah, and others as well. And Abdullah, I'm also agreeing with you that that was something that was at odds with me, or I was at odds with. Okay. Didn't quite make sense on one level. Okay. Very good. TJ, you didn't put anything there. Okay. The Abdullah, you said in 1855 they reached freedom. Who is they?
Araminta and her brothers.
I see. Were these her same brothers? This is to everybody who had started off with her, and her first run for freedom?
No, I think the brothers that she was with the first time, they turned and ran back.
Oh, really? Where do you get that from?
That's just off the top of my head.
Okay. It's a great. I encourage you to. We had a good talk about that in class, didn't we? About that portrayal and the kind of idea that such an imagery evokes, and that is that Araminta was a brave one and they were afraid and ran back. Who remembers that discussion? And what did we say about that? Abdullah, wait just a minute. Nima, do you remember that discussion? Amatala, I don't think you do. Unique, you remember that discussion? Langston? Okay. That's a major one. Because it's a major one. Okay, Nima. What do you remember?
I remember we're talking about sometimes in stories people would say that Araminta would force some cowardly African captives to escape and other things like that. As far as her brother specifically, I don't really remember the conclusion that we drew besides that none of us were like cowards or anything like that, and that people had other reasons for their, I guess, you know, fear or insecurity, and it wasn't a thing where she would have to force people into freedom. That, yeah, we were just saying that people weren't, like,
all right. Very good. And this is significant to this part right here. For those of you, just so that you take notes, this section is on page 35. It's called The Escape. And y'all just have to bear with the noise in the background. There's just some work going on. So if you need me to talk loud or talk louder, I will. Araminta's flight occurred in 1849. She'd been living with Dr. Thompson for 2 years, she and her husband occupying one of the many cabins in the quarters. Her parents and several brothers and sisters still lived on this plantation, all in the service of Dr. Thompson, who hired out to other nearby users of Africans. It was what the author says, it was no wonder that the brothers lost courage. So I can see where you would get that from. Of course, their course was across one of the most hazardous no man lands in history, not less perilous than a field of battle, and hundreds of miles in depth. This became evident to Araminta's brothers from the minute they stole away. On all sides were whites and Negroes who knew them, who might suspect they were escaping, who might inform on them, prevent their even getting out of Dorchester County. If one person reported to Dr. Thompson that they were seen heading north, the news would be relayed speedily to the captors and African catchers all through the region. Handbills announcing their escape could be spread far and wide overnight. Then what men could not find, bloodhounds might find. Araminta remained over Sunday. On Monday night, an African from another part of the plantation came privately to tell her that she and her brothers were to be carried off that night. That was enough. Araminta decided to venture forth alone, and this time to make good the flight. Now, the question that I'd ask is, could it have been that their brothers saw, in their estimation, that it made better sense for them not to go at that time together? That what they saw was, in fact, saved her life? I just want to dispel and be aware of less. That is, I choose to believe that her brothers saw some things and says, this is not safe. This is not safe enough. And that they came back. And it may have been that we don't all need to go together, you know, because it would be easier for us to be spotted and easier to know that one is missing. I don't know their conversation, but I choose to believe that what they saw made sense to them, for them to come back, and that it was the right thing to do. Just as it was the right thing to do for Araminta to then move forward alone. Do y'all see that? Do you see how both of those can be true at the same time? And if you can't, you can say it, okay? And what we're doing is we're practicing what's called diurnal thinking, how two things seemingly opposing can be true at the same time. It's an African versus European worldview, that it made sense for them, and it was a smart thing for them to, the brothers, to pull back and pull her back. And it also was a smart thing for her to leave alone. And just some of the power of her brothers to me was shown when Henry ran all night to meet them. It just didn't show me brothers who were chicken. Okay. It was also brothers who were strong enough to accept the leadership of their sister, when it was, you know, time to do that. So that's, to me, a significant piece we spent some time on, and you're likely to have a question like that to see if you take in that part. Okay, let's go to the locomotive. The locomotive of history. Let's move to that part. Now I'm skipping over the escape of Joshua Bailey. Okay. And we're going to chapter 9. I want the same question and put it in the text chat, the private text chat. In this chapter 9, what was it about? And what did you take away as significant to you? Okay, it was a small chapter, page 84 to 90. So just 6 pages. What was it about? And what was significant to you? You can type, why was it significant? Because I'm going to speed up a little bit.
Did we do chapter 8 or chapter 7?
Mm-mm. I just skipped it. If there is something significant about chapter 7 and 8 that you want to add, please do. Anybody? We also didn't do guerrilla warfare in the mid-50s. What's your sadness, Langston? I assume that man is a regret that we skipped some chapters. Is that true? Hey, brother, you always can take us back so that you can shine. You know, just I don't mind hearing something that you think is significant. Just put it in your text chat. You can put it from another chapter. All right, so let's see what we got. Let's start off with Nima this time. Let's see what we have. Significant explanation of Bleeding Kansas. Araminta's inspiration to join John Brown. Fred Douglas's part in the Republican Party. All right. Amatala says Bleeding Kansas. John Brown's introduced. I think it said Frederick Douglass was a Republican. I think the chapter of Joshua Bailey was introduced. Actually, that was a chapter just before that. Abdullah says, Missouri Compromise and Definition of Mason-Dixon Line, Bleeding Kansas. John Brown is introduced. Langston says, Scepter 9 is very significant because it talked about the skirmish between the North and South. Pro-captivity and anti-captivity sides called Bleeding Kansas. Langston also says in Chapter 8, songs were important in the escape of Joshua Bailey because of Araminta's campaign, as part of her campaign, because they had close spiritual meanings and were a form of communication. It starts with telling her, singing a song to communicate with the Africans. She was leading to freedom, of whether it was safe for them to come out. This is significant to the story, to give readers a deeper understanding of the song's usage. Yes, absolutely true, Langston, and of the intelligence of your ancestors, and how far we've come. We often don't use those same Christian songs as coded messages for our freedom today. I wish we did. Now we just use them as good old Christian songs. Okay. And number 7, Guerrilla Warfare in the Mid-50s, talks about Araminta going through the woods and teaching Green Smith and friends how to stalk. Also talks about Araminta constantly went from lands where African captivity was allowed to free states. She traveled to many cities in Canada, helping, lending a helping hand to newly freed, attending abolition meetings. All right, good. Very good. Very good. TJ? Also, Black Adams worked to set the West free. It was significant because it told about the movement of people and it introduced the Bleeding Kansas situation. TJ, we got to get you a mic, brother, because I need you to explain what you mean about the Bleeding Kansas situation. All right. I think you have the gist of it. Where is the Mason-Dixon line? Anybody? What is it and where is it? It's a great guess. Nope. Where is this Mason-Dixon line? Abdullah, you said it introduced the Mason-Dixon line. It did. Where is it, this thing? Where? You mean it separates? Well, I mean, where? Where is the separation? If you're going up 85 to D.C. or if you're going to Ohio from Charlotte, where is that Mason-Dixon line, Abdullah?
User entered your channel.
And Nima, your definition is actually much more accurate than North and South, okay? Because to assume that all North was free territory and all South was, but it's a much better This is above the line, at least initially when it was established. There were to be no legal captivity of Africans in those new territories. Of course, that was contained, that agreement was what document? Where Nima says the line that separates pro and anti. T.J. Sutton said it's under Indiana. Very good. Nope, Nima. It was that agreement was before then. Now, this is into the U.S. history section of it, okay, we're dealing with it. Very good. It's the Missouri Compromise, okay? That was changed, okay? That compromise was compromised, okay? And it was changed. All right. Abdullah, why was this a big situation? Why was there a conflict around this? Since, you know, northern white folks weren't any more moral than southern white folks, or any more loving of African people, what? Why did this struggle?
From my understanding, it was about labor and jobs.
Be more specific.
When black folks went up north, they would be taking like a lot of jobs, or they would open up their own businesses that would be taking money away from white people's businesses. So white people didn't like that, and I believe the South also didn't like that. Black people were running away, and they were losing profit, I guess. And that's it.
Okay, Abdullah, if you follow your logic of what you said, and y'all, this is an important part in terms of understanding these themes. As you study history, as you become historians, junior historians, you really are looking, you're not just dates and data and pattern, you're looking for causes, you're to really understand what drives a story forward. And Abdullah, what you said was about labor. It's true. When you say that the white folks were afraid of black people, for example, taking their jobs, then what that would then support is white people wanting us to be in captivity if we were to be in the territory, because that way we wouldn't take their jobs, right? So how does that explain why there's a conflict? Like, yeah, keep them Africans in captivity, and if you bring them up here, keep them in captivity. So I ain't got to compete with them, following your logic. So go ahead.
I thought it was like something like, I mean, once they went up north, they were considered free until that the Fugitive Captive Act was in place, where they could just turn in black folks like for nothing. But if they went up north, then they were considered free, so the South couldn't really get them back, and the North was kind of like stuck with them until that Fugitive Act. So
yeah, the only thing is, what I'm asking is what the conflict was about between the white northern states and the white southern states. What was this conflict? And what you said would support there being no conflict for the folks, the white folks in the North, saying hooray to African captivity and bring it on, and we want more of it. If being free means they competed with their jobs. And they did, y'all, and this is where it's important to know the different parts, okay? You got to know the different parts to it, okay? That is to understand what happened. You can't just piecemeal, I know this fact, and I know this fact, and I know that fact. Okay? That is, this was a conflict. And when you're studying history and studying whatever, there is an event. If it was a significant event, you want to study how it came to be. What were the forces that were behind it? That way you really understand, Abdullah and others, how to see those same forces when you're trying to solve problems now. Okay? Otherwise, history is just nothing. It's just what happened back then is just a few things. But you see patterns, you see trends, you see causes, then you will be able to then see those same patterns and causes. The next time you see an event or you see the past, let me look at this and let me look at the cause. You're used to starting to look at the why of it. And when you understand that, when your skill at understanding the why of it is applied to now, then you will be a problem solver at a deep level. Okay. Okay. So, Neiman, what do you say?
I was saying that the white laborers had to compete with the Africans, doing their jobs for free as captives. So nobody would hire a white person to do a job that they could have African captives do for free. So they wanted Africans to be out of captivity so they could have a better chance.
Okay, very good. Now, Abdullah, what is the difference between what she said and what you said? Because I believe that's what you meant.
Because that's what I meant. I mean, I don't see a difference. I don't know.
Well, that's why I asked you the question. That's what you meant. And what is the difference between what she said and what you said? Because y'all didn't say the same thing, although you meant the same thing, and I knew it. And what's important is that you know that you say what you mean. And so what was the difference? Anybody who observed that or listened to both of those? Nobody heard them. You heard them say the same thing?
Captives were free, they would have to compete, and he said that if they were captives, they wouldn't have to compete with white people.
That's right. The key difference is our being in captivity is what would drive the labor down. We wouldn't be competing with them for jobs because there would be none. Okay. That is, we would be doing the work, but not in a free market, Abdullah, okay? We would be doing the work so they wouldn't be hired to do the work, or their wages to do it would be very low because they had these people doing it for free. So in some ways, they were saying, bring on I'd rather have the African competition in a free market than the sense of Africans being able to do this job and being required to do it for free, because then I won't make any money. Does that make sense to you and the rest of y'all? Because this is critical. You will not get out of here. That's the understanding the economics part of the course. Okay. Abdullah, do you see what you said was different than what Neema said?
Yes.
Okay. Now, that being said, they weren't excited about us, about competing with us free. Okay. At the same time, it was a better situation for poor white people to, and laborers of whatever, working class, to compete against us in a free market where we still were discriminated against, mind you. Okay, by white people. At the same time, it's just absolute. And when you're in captivity, you know, in terms of the South, okay. All right. That is significant to understand the conflict that's going on. Okay. Tell me about the Nebraska, Kansas, that particular compromise. The Nebraska-Kansas Act. Tell me about that. TJ, you can type what you know about that. While you are typing, Unique, what do you know about the Kansas-Nebraska Act? Talk to me. That's what it was about.
Well, I don't know anything off the top of my head.
That means you don't know anything. See, where's it gonna be if it's not off the top of your head, under your feet?
No.
Okay. Okay, cancel the bracket, Bill. I heard, yeah, when your name was called, you heard me when your name was called. What I said is, what is the Kansas-Nebraska? Okay, was it a bill? What was that? Bill or or act. What is that? What was that about? Tarala? Unique? I hope you are taking notes, because the things that I ask you are the things that you must know, okay? All right? And you will have to answer when you return. You'll probably have to answer over the holidays, okay? All right, Langston, what is that, this Kansas-Nebraska bill or act? What was that about? What did it do?
It created the territories of Kansas and Nebraska.
What was significant about it to our story?
It was territories where African captivity was legal.
You finish? What was the struggle, Amatala? What was the struggle? Why was this significant to our story? Ooh, oh, y'all flunking the U.S. history section of the course. Okay. All right. Tell us, Nima.
Made it legal for pro-captivity captors to go into the, I guess, once anti-captivity areas, and to go seize them and use them for African bondage, I think.
Yes, that's true, Nima. And TJ, you got citizens in Kansas and Nebraska decided whether, well, what did they decide, TJ? How did this thing go? We spent some time looking at this piece. Because there was something having to do with balance, the balance of power. What did it have to do with the balance of power? Okay. Now, which one of these, was it the Missouri Compromise or the Kansas-Nebraska Act that happened? They had to bring in Maine at the same time because Maine was a part of Massachusetts, and Maine wanted to be its own state, and they brought in Maine, and there was this balance they were trying to keep of the states. What was the issue in terms of balance that they needed to keep in the states? A balance, what kind of balance of power? Was it the struggle here? Okay. There was now this, you know, was not, I don't know even if it was just in the book. We certainly spent a lot of time, and when I put things in here in the text chat for you to begin to know about this, I think we actually looked it up together, and so you'd find it in the text chat. What did this have to do with Alabama and and Maine, you know, how this was now brought into the captive state. You remember there was a balance between the African captive states and the states that were free labor, and it was a sense of not wanting to have a balance of power shift. That's right. In terms of voting power, they'll vote which way the nation was going to go. And so to keep that, then, you know, there was a lot of jockeying. So y'all got to read that again. Okay, that's just critical. That is a continuation of the earlier struggle. Okay. Now, the first time we see this balance of power struggle, that's done on and won by the southern states. What's the first time you see that in the U.S. History, or at least in terms of the documentation? First time you see evidence, and we've talked about this, of this struggle between South and North, okay, pro-African captivity and not. What's the earliest you see that in the documentation of America?
User in your channel timed out.
All right. Time's up. Glad you're thinking.
User entered your channel.
It's called the 3/5 Compromise. What was that about?
It was about voting, the Africans would be counted as 3/5 of the vote.
For what purpose?
I believe it was just to keep it fair, because most of the Catholics were down south, so it would give them upper hand, I guess, if black people were able to vote.
Nah. You think it was agreed upon by the North because it would give the South the upper hand, and the South would have more voting power. The opposite is true. What do you say, Nima?
Get, they count how many people are in that specific area. And so they lessened the black person so that it would be as if they had less people, so they wouldn't get an unbalanced amount of representatives in the Senate, I think.
Wrong. You're right and wrong. You're right one part of it. That is, it's about apportionment, it's about voting. Okay. What whites? There were whites in the North, whites in the South, Tarala. What do you say on this? Abdullah and Nima, you said the same thing, and you are hot, just a key part you're missing in that, okay? What do you say, Langston?
I was going to agree with Micah, but then you said it wasn't right.
Okay, all right. At this time, and when the American Constitution or the Articles of the Confederation are being drawn up, Africans are not considered persons at all, particularly Africans in where we're in, or even some free, quote-unquote, free Africans could not vote, okay? So it was not about that. If you were going to allow all Africans to vote, that wasn't even a question. It was actually much greater of a statement to say that they could be counted at all, because Africans were considered what?
property. So you can't have us considered property and also have property voting unless your chair can vote. Can your horse vote? You can count the heads of cattle you got so they can vote. Okay. So if you are just dealing with who would be voting and therefore who would have greater representation based on the population, the northern states would have the advantage, as should they, in terms of population. Because what you had is few white people maintaining control over a larger population of black people who were not people at all, who were property. So it was not for fairness at all. It was for maintaining white pro-captivity power. Okay? It was a condition under which if we can't come count these folks, this property, as part of our, to give us a greater voting power, then we're going to be outvoted based on population, as will any city, as in any state. California today has a tremendous voting block because of how large the state is and how populous it is. Rhode Island is a state. It doesn't have the kind of population, so it doesn't have as many people coming into the representatives. The senators are the same. The senators are two from every state, regardless of the size. The House of Representatives, based on population. So Maine doesn't have, Rhode Island or Maine, both of those are small states in terms of population, they don't have the representation that New York City does. Because New York City has more people, so it ought to have more representation. Well, in the South, then, of white people who could vote, the South had less people. And what would have happened, do you think, if in fact you got a Congress and there were less white representatives there, as it should be, based on the fact that Africans were property? What would have been, I want y'all to see that struggle there. Do you see it? Now, what's the difference between what I said and what you said, Abdullah and Nima?
We were saying that the South had the South had the upper hand because it was like as if it was already counting black people as a whole person, and we were saying that so it can be fair, they lowered it to a 3/5 of a person when in fact it was at 0 before and they raised it to 3/5.
Very good. In order to give the South more power than it deserved, as opposed to make it fair to the North. Very good, Nima. You got that, Abdullah?
Yes.
You got that, Langston?
Yes.
Now, so now you got early on the South strong-arming, all right, we're going to have this advantage in order for us to continue, in order for us to even be a part of this union. This is our requirement. And folks went along with it, even though it went against the principles of the whole Constitution. How are you going to count people as 3/5? How are you going to count property? You can't both be property and not property at the same time. Right? So this was a tension that continued. Now also continued in another way, in that document and in succeeding documents, that tension between North and South in terms of documentation. What am I talking about? What are some of the documentation that showed that struggle continued? Besides what we talked about in terms of the Missouri Compromise and the Kansas-Nebraska Act, there is a series of acts or legislations or documents that evidence that tension. Very good, Nima. It's the Fugitive Captive Acts. Okay. Now, this is your story. You got to know this, okay? So, you, of course, know when the first National Fugitive Captive Act was, right? Fire up the text chat. Put it in your private. I want it in the private text chat. Who was the first one? We covered this extensively in this class. The first, it wasn't necessarily an act. It was part of the documentation. Unique, I don't see anything in your chat. TJ, you're right. When was it? Langston, you got some dates. When was it? What was it? What was it? You got the when. What was it? Unique, I don't see anything. Nima. What was it? And where was it? I'll accept the dates kind of fuzzy, but that's cool. Okay. Amatala, dates are kind of fuzzy. It's okay. You're in the time period. Where was it? You know, what was it? No, your date is too far off, Abdullah. And what was it? Your Tarala, where you have it is in the right place. The time period is way off. Okay. You want to go back and get this, tighten this one up, folks. Now, I'm hoping you see this is a thread that I want you to be able to write about, okay? This is a thread I want you to be able to study, and that is, the thread is, there's a struggle from the beginning of this so-called forming of the nation, of this tension between African captive states and those states who didn't, white people who didn't want Africans in captivity for economic reasons, not cause of moral stuff. Although you had a small group of white people in the North who were advocating for moral changes morally and whatever, but that wasn't the sentiment of the North particularly around the morality of it and loving black people, as you saw with Lincoln later on. At the same time, there was this economic struggle, and race was at the center of it. We were at the center of it, okay? And I want you to know the historical documentation that starts from, as you said here, or you should have said, the Articles of Confederation, okay? And then from that, you have embedded in it a fugitive captive clause. And that gets reiterated and strengthened and renewed over several years. I mean, over different periods. Okay? When's the second time we see this fugitive captive clause or act after the Articles of Confederation? Fired up in the text chat. If you don't know, then, I mean, in your private text chat. If you don't know, put the question there. Okay? Because this is a thread I want us to see. If you put 1850, then you missed one in between. Okay? So just do some research. Tighten that up. You want to be able to know when in the Articles of Confederation, what did it say there? Okay? And then you move it, okay, into successive periods to show you this tension. Okay? All right. In the initial one, the initial clause, this was federal. That was throughout the nation. And there were use of federal marshals in that. What were the use of federal marshals for? Okay, folks, what we got here? All right. No sense of the federal marshals, what I've asked. Oh, Amatla says to reclaim Africans. Okay, very good. Very good. Okay. What was the bribe built into the act? There was a bribe built in. What you written, Amatla and TJ, was right, and Nima. What was the bribe?
Are we supposed to private chat that?
No, you can say it out loud. Come on.
Because when you go in front of the judge to for them to decide whether you were a fugitive or not, they were paid more if you were marked a fugitive than if you were a fugitive. And we did the actual monetary ratio, and I forget it all, but...
Great, Abdullah. It's great. Your sister, Amatla, and I worked out some of the monetary stuff on that, too. So what are those numbers, Amatla? And how do we translate? How do we translate that into today's money?
I think $5 was $30 and $10 was $60.
Oh, a little bit bigger, a little more than that. But I'll let that be. I do want you to know how to make that, because if you're making the point, because today, looking back, $5 and $10 ain't a big thing. But when you really shift it, basically you're dealing with a ratio, and that is twice as much. So if one was 250, the other was 500. Like, whoa. You know, if one is, 180, then the other one is 360. It begins to be a little bit different. If one is half a million and the other one's a million. So it matters. And again, that's an example where you want to be seeing it through the eyes of the people then. And so translating into today's dollars gives us a better way of seeing, wow, that was a great incentive. Okay. To throw us into captivity, even if we were so-called free. Why did Araminta not trust European documentation? She had a personal reason for not trusting European documentation and European legal process and European people. Very good. Nice and very good, Nima. All right. Y'all are smoking. So we've gotten this Kansas, Nebraska. You got the Murray's of Compromise. You got the Mason-Dixon line. You have the balance of power struggle. You have the labor issue. Okay. Now, we're going to spend the next 10 minutes on W.E.B. Du Bois. Okay? And we'll use a transition, the labor transition. How you got the book? Wonderful. Glad you did. I talked to your mom about it. So I want you to read it. Okay? Now that you got it, I want you to read it. Okay? And you can start with the chapters that we start with here that you were to download, okay? First, who is W.E.B. Du Bois? Don't have to private text chat, but who is Du Bois? Everybody tell me a little bit about him. Somebody can start. Don't look it up. Just what you remember.
He was a civil rights activist, and has a lot of literature.
Civil rights activist? Really? As in, like, Martin Luther King, civil rights activist?
That's just what I've heard him being called, so I was just like, alright.
That's cool. I'm guessing it's good. Yeah, it's partially true. Okay, Unique, you want to say something? Don't ask me no questions when I'm telling you. You know, tell me what you think. It can be a guess, but don't ask it with a question. Say it with what you think or what your guess is.
He was an abolitionist.
Black or white?
Black.
And what period did he live? Like he lived a period like David, David Walker, and okay, 1860s, okay. All right. Anybody else want to say something about David Walker? W.E.B. Du Bois. What do you know about him? It's always a good idea when I suggest or when we have reading in class. It's always a good idea. Thank you, TJ. He didn't just write articles. He was a multi-genius. He was a historian extraordinaire. And he brings to the history the race and class analysis. Okay. Which is why he would bring to fore facts about the labor issue, and he would call the things a general strike, okay? And he emphasized the labor issues, okay? Yes, very recent, relatively, but not so recent as to be part of the civil rights movement, as we know it, as we typically think of it with King and all of that. If you think of our whole history as a civil rights movement, then you know, or the Black Liberation Movement. You know, he was contemporary with Marcus Garvey and Booker T. Washington and you know, that crew. And he grew, and he went through a lot of transitions and grew. And he was a scholar, a very good one. That he was his whole life. His politics, fortunately, changed. To be less influenced by his white friends. One of the biggest things that you'll find about him is he was in Atlanta. He helped to start the whole field of sociology as we know it was pioneered by him. Okay, and it was started in that pioneer fashion at Atlanta University, the AU Center here. And his piece called The Philadelphia Negro was the title of his book, was a quintessential document of how you do research on social issues and people. So, you know, you might check that out or read at least some summaries about it. You're not required to read the book. And also locate him in a time period so you know how to locate him. He was not abolitionist. African captivity was over. Legal African captivity was over. At the same time, he was born right at the end, as captivity was beginning to come to an end, and then so would have come to age. He would have been 5 years old at the signing of the at the end of the Civil War. Labor and W.E.B. Du Bois. What's the most significant thing that he highlights, W.E.B. Du Bois, in your reading about labor? You can type this in your text chat, private text chat. What's the most significant thing that W.E.B. Du Bois writes about labor? And what you assigned to read, or things, as far as you're concerned, significant things about labor. Whomever you want to relate it to, however he related it. Very good question. It was intended to be open so that you could talk about both of those. Or three of those, or ten of those, or one of those, whichever one made sense.
gosh. What about that, too?
No, I'm serious. Abdullah, you know what the question is?
Yes, I'm sorry. My connection dropped for a second.
Yeah, I see. I just wanted to make sure you know what the question is. TJ, you know what the question is? The question, TJ, is what does W.E. Du Bois say that's significant to you about labor? What are some of the most significant things he's saying about labor? All right. I see what you got. All right, got that, Langston. Unique, I don't see anything that you've added. So if you don't have anything to add, type the question in the text chat. It makes me know that you're paying attention. All right, Neem, I see what you have. Matala, you still thinking? And I assume writing. All right, Abdullah, got that. All right. Very good. Well, you can type it. It's time for us to roll on here. All right. Langston says, for significant for him, he writes that the laborers in England were in favor of emancipation because Lincoln was advocating for the freedom of Africans who were in captivity and laborers. And Langston also says Africans were receiving no pay for their labor. And I assume you're talking about the Africans in captivity, Langston, is that right? So here in an act of solidarity from laborer to laborer, okay. All right, that's what he says significant. Unique, doesn't have anything right here. Nima says, how the white soldiers were dependent on African labor. And how we were contraband of war. Okay, now Neem, explain that last one in connection to labor, please.
That our labor was key to one side's success, and the other, the enemy recognized like that fact. So that.
Sorry about that. Mama Fia is laughing out loud here. So I'll keep cutting my mic on and off. Okay, Neem, I got that. Now, that is not, that is absolutely true what you said. I don't get that when you just say how we were contraband of war. Contraband of war actually means confiscated property. And it was under that title because it was one that's used. And it just, if you put that, then you would need to put that other part with it. That you say it out loud, okay, to make sure that the people get it. Otherwise, it can be, well, we were just, whenever you fight in war, contraband of wars, you receive or take whatever the property is for your own use, okay? So that's how he was trying to do that, almost with a little tongue-in-cheek fashion. Okay. When you say about labor and black reconstruction, why don't you put those two chapters that we talked about, because he talks about labor also throughout black reconstruction, and you're only focusing on those two chapters. Abdullah has a number of things, including if Africans stopped working, the South would starve. Africans were powerful enough to save the Union. How is that connected to labor, sir?
I'm not sure. I was just naming stuff off the top of my head, so.
Okay, I assume, okay. African soldiers were paid less than white soldiers. Okay, white soldiers 13 a month, Africans 10, $3 deductible clothing. Okay. All right, well, when we put these together, you began to get some of a picture. The Langston's piece was also very significant, and it was related to that part where people's opinion, you remember he was talking about in the W.B. Du Bois piece, how the support internationally would be swayed more in the North's favor if the North proclaimed, even though it didn't believe and didn't start this as a fight for African captivity, African freedom, okay, and freedom from bondage, if that was claimed, then there would be some international favor on that. You remember that part? If you don't, it's okay. I'm just saying, do you? All right, folks, talk to me. Did you hear the question?
Can you repeat the question?
Yes, that is this part that Langston puts in here, that is that the part of laborers in England being in favor of emancipation, and because Lincoln was advocating for freedom of Africans and laborers. So in the documentation that you were asked to look at, and the yellow sticky notes or whatever color they are on your screen, there was a section where Du Bois noted that even though Lincoln was reluctant to move forward in this and proclaim that this was about freeing Africans from bondage, that he decided that one of the reasons he decided to do that and have that be the spin on it, if you will, was because it would be able to garner better international support and take some support from the South if it was had the moral spin on it.
User disconnected from your channel.
Do y'all remember that section? If not, just take a note of it and just go back and find it. It's there on one of the yellow sticky notes on page probably 1, 2, 3, I think, of the third page in that. All right? All right, so you want to get that because it means it's one of the stickies, and y'all are responsible for, like, knowing that stuff, okay, all through that document, okay? And so here's the connection of this to that, okay, that Langston provided here. That is... and somebody else also mentioned, I think, Douglas going to there. Which one of you mentioned Douglas going to speak there? Okay. Neither one of you. Terrell, let me see what you put. Nothing. Okay. So because you'd get a split, because this was now the moral thing to do, at least that was the spin, then the Africans and others could go to Europe and rally support among the laborers, and that would cause a split. And so it would slow down Europe's support of the South through gunships and all those things. Those ships that Araminta captured on the Combahee River, those ships were provided by Britain. Okay, so you got that connection. So that's one in terms of labor. What I wanted you to do, and you can stop me if you didn't get it, to make that connection between that labor issue and then the political advocacy. Okay, you know, the motivation. All right, Nima has already talked about that. how white soldiers were dependent on African labor, and you, if you don't know that, you need to know that. And she explained in her "How We Are Contraband of War" that we would our labor was transferred from supporting the South to supporting the North, and that was for one reason and one reason only. And that was for freedom. Okay? That's the biggest piece, the biggest single piece, okay? And that is, we transferred our labor both for starving the South and for arming the North, okay, and aiding it, okay? That's one of the reasons I don't like the movie. The main reason I don't like the movie Glory is that it portrays the story of this white boy, and he is motivating us, and there's this line by Freeman that y'all got to prove that y'all are men. So it is the prove it mentality, that we got to prove that we're somebody to white folks, okay, that I really don't like about the movie, because it's a embedded white supremacy piece in there, okay, when in fact we were already fighting. I got you, Amatala, and we didn't have to prove that we were brave to anybody. Okay, that was that whole piece of, now these folks are brave. Why? How did these Africans prove that they were brave, Abdullah? By going into a battle and being slaughtered. Really? You know, following some, you know, no. See, that sets a kind of crazy precedent. As opposed to, didn't we show we were brave when Araminta? At the Battle of the Combahee? No, they're going to portray it as just, well, these other folks were kind of weak. You don't come up and out of there that you got spy espionage, which is why I also said that John Brown should have waited, because he was not nearly the general. He was brave, but he was not nearly the general that Araminta was. Y'all remember the story of Araminta that I told you when she first got there, people didn't trust her? Y'all remember that? It was in the book. You remember how she earned the trust? How she earned the trust? Who remembers that? How did Araminta, in the Civil War, in the beginning, when she went south, they said, you talk funny. And besides, you know all these white people, because most of them were abolitionists. Most of the folks who volunteered on the part of the Union side were abolitionists. So she'd already knew them in battle from years before. And they trusted her. And she got paid. And folks were saying, man, you know, I don't know you. You sound funny. And, you know, you in with these white folks. That's what the Africans said. So what did she do to earn their trust? It's directly connected to the Battle of the Combahee River, okay, and her strategy, okay? And this is, the author goes to great pains to repaint a picture of her.
User in your channel, okay? Started recording.
And this is key. And that is, she stopped taking the pay, half that it was, okay, and started a business on the battlefield. She started baking pies. And she got the local Africans to go and sell the pies to the other folks. And so they would get money. So the folks who would buy the pies were the folks on the battlefield, white folks, and the captains and the other folks who she knew. But now she was empowering those Africans by putting money in their pockets, by being a business owner in the middle of a battlefield. But the reason she was doing this, so she would earn their trust. She could have just been mad with them, Abdullah, because she came down to help them, and look at them Negroes, don't even trust her. But it made sense for them not to trust her. They didn't know her. Given their life, it made sense. And what she understood is she had to earn their trust, and she did. And so when she got ready to go in the Battle of Combahee River, okay, she had earned people's trust and knew how to earn their trust. And so they would be spies and be loyal to her and what the mission was and wouldn't betray it because she knew how to earn our people's trust, even when they distrusted her at the beginning. I hope you are as successful, all of you, at earning our people's trust. You don't get it by putting our people down. You know, I don't want you to miss this point, because she was able to do what she did because she earned people's trust and then was able to get information, okay, about where this torpedo is, what's this, what's over here, and get people doing inside work. John Brown wasn't as wise. I don't mean he wasn't courageous. He was. He needed the wisdom of Araminta, who was as brave and as wise, well, as brave and much more wiser, okay? And so that's what you get in terms of her warriorship, okay? To be a warrior by yourself is nothing. You can't win it by yourself, and she knew that. And she also wanted to, she didn't want just a blank flame of whatever. She wanted the most victory with the least loss of life. So there you have this Araminta. Don't forget that story. I want you to know it. It's not made up. It's, you know, here in the text. But you know, if you don't understand how she became the espionage agent, that is how she used intelligence. Okay. I think I've told you that hers was the model for U.S. intelligence. And you'll find that on the Balagoon, actually. No, you can ask him. He knows where to find it on the FBI website, as they really documented her tactics and became the stock and trade of how you do espionage. Okay. Now, you know, if you don't know it, you let people think that she was just some lucky God woman who was brave with a gun, and you won't understand her smarts as well. You know. All right, folks. It's 12:29. I hope that you use this period. We've covered some threads. I'm hoping that you see where are some of the holes in yours. You must finish reading and finish reading over this holiday period. Okay, you must update your notes. You'll come back to a monster exam based on what we've covered. I hope you've been recording today. You know, some of the things we couldn't, but mainly you are to know causes and what and these, you know, patterns and what contributed to them. Okay, what moved the story forward. And that's what you're extracting from. If I were to say right now, Nima, you have done that best. Abdullah, you have done that next best. Langston, you're nipping at Abdullah's heels, and in some ways you've actually surpassed him. In some ways not. Unique, you are not on the radar screen, whether that's partly because of your internet connection, but partly because you just haven't been doing the work, I'll be honest with you. TJ, you've said since your microphone and stuff have been down, it's just been a major drop off for you, so you got to get that straight, and you and I are going to work over the holidays on that. And you, Unique, you and I are going to work over the holidays as well. Langston, I may talk to you a little bit over the holidays because I got to make sure you're doing what I want you to do here and catching up all that. Amatala. You've done very well in this class. This is your first year at AYA, and this is a difficult class to jump in. By some people, think it is. I actually think it's not. I love it, but what can I say? And what I love is you have done the readings and you've done your pages and your notes, and I like that. There are some of the trends and some of the going back and studying that I really want you to do so that you don't, like, we covered it, but you know it, and you know this is connected to that. And that's just a growth stretch. I want to see this, you know, everybody, that's the standard. Just want you to know. If we covered it on the first week, if it was significant, you need to know it. For those of y'all today who says, I don't know, off the top of my head, I got to look at my notes. Very few things have I asked that shouldn't be in your head. And if I asked, I'd accept it, even ballpark stuff, like some of the dates. I wasn't a stickler on that, unless it just really mattered. And I hope you've been taking notes at where some of your holes are, and you take the time to finish this book, to look at the whole stretch. Okay, I put all of the sections in it. Look at the whole stretch so that you can tell this story. And all of you, believe it or not, will be asked to tell this story. And I'll just tell you that right up front. You're going to be asked to tell this story through the various sections. And no one of you will tell it the same way. But on your pages should be a summary of the story, and you should have it so that you have a sense of the story and what's significant to you. And I'm not so important that everything is significant, like that you have the same things. That you need to know what's significant to you and significant to the story and how it moves the story forward, you know, in this way. It's been I'm taking this extra time because when I'm done, school is done. Okay, we're not going to have an afternoon session. Okay, so just give me a little bit of time here because we're going to be out of here. And I do want to stay in with appreciations and reflections. Abdullah, I will start with you. I appreciate the semester that you started off really helping everybody who had computer issues and problems, going out of your way to help them. I really see that, and I appreciate that that you do. And I've seen you, you know, also help students, and I think you've enjoyed being with some more brothers this year, and that's been clear. You've been more active, so I appreciate, you know, that. I do want you to continue to grow in some of the areas of putting yourself in people's shoes when you're studying from a historical perspective, being able to separate your view looking back and their view looking on. I'll continue to, you know, push you to do that.
User in your channel timed out.
I want greater writing from you, more depth and more breadth, okay? More poignant examples. Your papers are too short. And I'm not suggesting that papers have to be long. I am suggesting that to explain fully for multiple audiences as people will be reading your stuff, then more examples and a deeper and wider analysis will be needed. And so that's an area I want your to go in. I like that you've been engaged with this with the piece and let yourself know and learn some things that you didn't know about it. So I appreciate that. TJ, I really appreciate your coming in after the class is going. Appreciate your mother for having the temerity to take you out of a bad situation and find this situation and trust it, even though I never knew her before she called me. And we don't have any people that we have in common that I know of. And so it was great that she was willing to do that, and that you been willing to jump in and add your voice to this. I don't know whether I can, but if I can, I will come to see you over the holiday period. I got a couple of trips, and they're not definite yet. But one is in January. That's going to be difficult. So I don't know whether I'll get to it. I'm going to try to. Okay, and if I don't do it, by the time school starts, I will get by February. So I appreciate your effort and your work. And I, this school is a little bit different, a lot different. And so I like that you were just willing to jump in and just hang on. You know, it'll all come to pass. Amatala, I like your voice, and your, opinion. I like your writing, and, and some of the goals that you have, as expressed, you've expressed in class and come through in your writing, in the analysis. It's great. I want you to as I said before, to study more. But I appreciate your jumping in and your example of keeping your notes up and doing the work and doing the reading and sometimes going where you didn't know why you were going, but just because it was assigned and you trusted and start pulling things out of it. Langston, I appreciate that you have you bring energy to it. I appreciate your being able to dig up gems as you have, like the one predating the African fugitive captive law, local to a particular colony, predating the Constitutional Convention. The Articles of Confederation, and other things like that. I want you to study more and look for trends, and I like that over time you've started saying what you guess as opposed to asking questions when I ask you questions, and trusting, that you are more on than off, particularly when you just follow your heart. I too appreciate your mother for her trusting us and trusting you to be there alone and deciding that you're going to really focus instead of just playing games and doing other things like that. So big ups to her. Langston, you will have to finish your interview with the white women if you plan to not be in to Araminta Purgatory. Okay. All right, you will not get out, and I know that's a language arts piece that we did. But I just want to remind you, when you say I've done all my work and I don't have to spend no time over the holidays and da da da, that there's work. Next semester, I really want you to keep up with your work. I thought you said the other day. If I'm wrong, please forgive me. Just drop it. It's not a big thing. What I want you to do is to have a better way of keeping up with what your work is that you have to do and doing it. And facing tough work, like that call that you need to make. And I think Unique is no longer in the class. Nima, I really liked your last PowerPoint presentation. Also, Abdullah, thank you for introducing people to Slide Rocket. I think you led the class in that, at least from my looking at it. And it is added to the quality of the presentations. Nima, your presentations are both artful and thoughtful. And And I really appreciate your continue to lead and how to do those in that way. As well as your being present and willing to participate and guess and all of that. I will look for and read both your and Abdullah's Citizen Kane review over the time and give you feedback on that. I actually enjoyed the breakup in the last section so that we would do that. So those are some appreciations that I have for you. I hope you understand the goals that I have for you is to become junior historians, for you to look at causes, not just dates, for you to know the intersection between psychology, economics, U.S. history, and our history. Okay, that's right. Scholars. Scholar warriors is ultimately what you're becoming, scholar warriors. Those who know and who study scholarship at the same time, who study it with an eye of fighting for our freedom, healing, the three things, fighting, healing, and building, warrior, healer, builder. And that's the goal. And that's, I'm measuring how far you get close to that. You'll do it in your own ways. At the same time, you're being able to digest some things. I want you to know how you study history in the past so that you'll be able to use it in the present. At the same time, you have to be a good student of it in the past in order to really use it in the present. Okay, and that's what I'm looking for. And more we will build on everything that you learn. And I hope some of you have seen that we've referred to some of the things that you learned in Economic Conundrum. Nothing is never done with. Everything builds on the other. And so it's important, all of you next semester, that when we take notes and you take notes in class and whatever, that you go back and study it and synthesize it and come with questions from those things. Okay. If there are appreciations, or that, not if there are, we're going to end with appreciation. So anything that you appreciate about this class and or the language arts class, you know, because it's been Tuesdays and Thursdays has just been a Wakesa blur. I'm sorry that things haven't worked out with Mama Yipende. And so I've often blended these classes. So anything that you appreciate or learned and relearned that you want to tag as a way to say goodbye for this semester, the mic is open. Please say it. I don't want it typed as much as I want to hear your voice. Unless, TJ, you please start typing. What do you appreciate? Okay, I hear you, brother. Anything you appreciate about your classmates? Anything you appreciate about yourself? And now is not the time to be general, folks. Now is the time to just pick up something. Pick out, if it's general, then you follow it up with a specific statement. Without just, you know, kidding around. You know, Langston, is anything you appreciate about any of your classmates? And you don't have to go through all of them. Just, you know, pick one or two or something that they did or said that you appreciate. Is there anything you appreciate about yourself? Is there anything you appreciate about this class or the language arts class? Same thing for any of you. Incidentally, that we end with appreciations, that we start with what we appreciate and then, you know, if it were me, options, that's actually a part of the psychology of it. And I'll tell you another time why. It's part of the healing based on, you know, our injuries as a people. And you're developing the skills of that. And I haven't really pushed it so hard this semester. At the same time, it's something that I want here. It's something that a skill to be developed. It's not something to be taken for granted. Particularly, you get good at it, at noticing things that are target for people and target for yourself. So, if you want to get out of here, then you're going to be real about something that you appreciate about yourself or about the class or about a classmate. It's just got to be genuine. Glad you're back, Unique. With any appreciations?
I guess, yeah, I appreciate myself being able to keep up with assignments and keep them turned in on time and doing them efficiently.
Appreciate being able to come to class and working out technical difficulties when I have them.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate this school, everyone in it, all of my teachers, and I appreciate the work and how it it's not just nonsense like mindless work or nothing has a purpose, but we're all doing this to better ourselves and better our people. I like the saying, or what you're trying to make us into, Baba Wakasa, builders, healers, and there's one more, there's three. I don't remember the last one, but, wait.
Cool, brother.
Healers and builders, yes. And I appreciate all of my classmates for being here and doing their best. And I hope you all have a nice break.
User in your channel stopped recording.
User in your channel stopped recording.
Y'all must don't want to go. This one's not
User
optional. This is the last one.
Channel stopped recording.
Okay. I appreciate everybody's. I appreciate everybody's diligence this semester, whether it's battling technical difficulties or getting used to the class and the workload and everything. And I know that I help Langston and Toronto a lot throughout the year as far as helping them get adjusted to the workload and what exactly was expected as far as I guess the standard. I know that I work a lot with them after school hours trying to get them adjusted, and I can see that they're finally starting to grasp what this is all about, and I appreciate that. What else? I appreciate myself for actually getting the computer up and running for the school year, because last year, I know Bob Cousin knows that I was having some major computer issues last year, and I finally got this computer to work, and so I appreciate myself for that, and I hope everybody has a good break.
Very good, Ashe.
I appreciate myself for being diligent with my assignments and getting them done on time.
All right. I think that's everybody. Y'all have a good break. Enjoy. It's over. Bye. See you.
User disconnected from your channel. User disconnected from your channel. Channel switched.